WATD presents Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
If it's Monday night, it's got to be Monday Night Talk with Kevin Tachi. So thanks for having me on.
Kevin, good for you to hold back and let him tell his story.
Putting the South Shore spin on politics, current events, and pop culture.
You guys are the center of the universe today, at least the political universe.
I believe both of you are from the area. Marshfield guys, yes, no?
Correct, yeah.
That's right.
There's only one person not from Marshfield in this room right now. And it's you.
It's me. I'm the outcast.
Well, you've always been generous with the time. I appreciate it very much.
Well, I'm honored to be on your show tonight, Kevin, with that impressive lineup you have.
I believe our guest that we've been waiting for, Congressman Stephen Lynch.
Kevin, good to join you.
The governor of the Commonwealth, Charlie Baker. You ready?
I got to tell you that it was really nice to hear Aerosmith on the intro there.
You're going
to
be the rock and roll governor?
I don't know about that, but...
We have Mayor Joe Sullivan joining us. Sir, how are you?
Well, Kevin, very good to be with you again.
Dr. Drew Pinsky. Dr. Drew, are you there?
I'm here. Thanks for having me.
Mr. Ming Tsai, welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks, Kevin.
Massachusetts State Auditor Suzanne Bump. Hello, Auditor. How are you?
I am fine, and I'm delighted to be with you this evening.
And now, your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to another Monday Night Talk. This today, of course, is Patriots Day. Some of you have been fortunate enough to have a long weekend, and today just happens to be the back end of that long weekend before you return to work tomorrow. And then there are some who didn't have the day off and are probably commuting home. We welcome all of you. Thank you for keeping your radio dial set here to 95.9 WATD and tuning into the program, a program that we usually do a lot of work to make sure there's a variety of conversation. It isn't necessarily just issues that are going on in the community or people running for office, but we will sometimes feature other guests, other things, authors, musicians, interesting topics that we all, from time to time have dealt with or encountered the problem. A little bit of a rundown as to what tonight's program will be about. We'll start things off after traffic. John Kingston, he is a Republican who is seeking your vote for U.S. Senate. He'll be joining us, and we'll chat about his campaign. And then at 6:40, good friend, author, production guy, Casey Sherman. He's here to share with us the launch in stores tomorrow, his new book, Above and Beyond. I can't wait. This is going to be a great conversation about his book, and he'll be out there promoting it, of course. Details about an event this coming Saturday, so you want to stay tuned for that. But the book, Above and Beyond, basically kind of takes you into those days during the Cuban Missile Crisis that we came so close to nuclear war, and knowing that there's an untold story about the two brave U-2 pilots who actually flew missions during those days to be able to get information. Of course, one of those pilots shot down and killed over Cuba. And from my understanding, that individual was the only casualty in the Cuban Missile Crisis. We'll get details from Casey about this fantastic book and what went into, some of the process that goes into writing a book. So stay tuned for that. And then the second hour of Monday Night Talk, it'll be a theme in the coming weeks. We will be featuring many local political forums headed up, moderated by managing news editor Christine James. Of course, myself and WATD reporter Charles Matheson will be asking questions. And this particular forum tonight will be for Marshfield Selectman, Thomas Viserka, who is trying for a second time at a run for the Board of Selectmen, and Michael Bradley, who is seeking his second term in office. Again, that coming up in just 40 minutes. So stay tuned for that.
I was born and raised in Massachusetts, and one of my favorite Masshole expressions is wicked. It's like heavy wall bangers. 10, 14, 19, male and female, 90 degree and 45 degree for $9.99. Wicked. Another favorite expression is pissa. Got oil? Brennan's has variable voltage batteries for $14.99. Pissa. Let's put the two together and make it a noun. There goes the guy passing everybody on the right. Morning rush hour traffic. Oh, aren't you a wicked pisser guy? Brennan Smoke Shop. Customers must be wicked pisser and have a valid state or federal ID to enter the store.
Monday Night Talk continues all week long. Go to 95.9WATD.com/Monday Night Talk and keep in touch on Facebook and Twitter. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
You have to love the political season, and it's great that this particular show is kind of, we're kind of in an area that we're able to speak to candidates, whether they're running for selectmen, maybe they might be running for state rep, state senate, even higher office, because that's what type of a year it is right now. We are fortunate to be joined by a gentleman who is running for U.S. Senate. We have Mr. John Kingston on the line. Mr. Kingston, welcome to Monday Night Talk, sir.
It's great to be with you, sir, and thanks so much for your listeners.
I have to say, first and foremost, tell my listeners a little bit about you.
Sure. I come from small town, rural America, you know, just south of the Massachusetts-Connecticut border. Town was a working class town, working class values. My dad was a military veteran who was a public school teacher. My mom stayed at home with us. You know, they struggled to get by for us, but ultimately they lived the American dream for us and taught my brothers and I love of country, love of God, love of neighbor as yourself as the defining, you know, dimensions of being an American, and the hard work really mattered here. And you know, here it is 30-some-odd years on, you know, those influences from my youth have propelled me, allowed me the opportunity, you know, to be able to run for one of the highest offices in the country and influence and lead the country I love so much. Along the way, I went away to school in Philadelphia, Penn, and Harvard, and a lot, you know, all of it on grants and loans and scholarships, you know, just lots and lots of loans like so many other folks have had to struggle with. And I've just, you know, lived a life that was way more successful than I ever dreamed it would be. I'm so grateful for that because, you know, again, I just did not see it when I was growing up. I didn't know I'd grow up to be a guy that had a possibility to influence the country that he loves, you know, in the political area. So that's a little bit about my background.
If you could, where do you stand as far as politics, your political career? Are you somebody who's been appointed to a local board, or maybe you're somebody who gets in, you have civic duties that you do, you belong to an organization that gives back to the community?
Well, you know, my success came in the investment management industry. After law school, I was at a big law firm for a while, and then went on to the investment management industry and helped to build a worldwide company headquartered here in Massachusetts, which created hundreds of jobs here. But that was my day job. But I've always been a serial social entrepreneur. I've created a wide variety of different initiatives myself, or helped build others' initiatives, you know, in all sorts of areas, battling in the world of ideas on campuses, trying to create spaces on campuses where sensible ideas can be shared rather than being beaten back by a far leftist, hey, you can't share those ideas on campuses world. That's something I've been doing for 30 years. I've worked with countless, I've created and worked with countless other organizations to help veterans and veterans' families. We got an event, in our Uniting America campaign on April 18th out in Worcester on veterans empowerment with a nationally known Gold Star mom, Karen Vaughn, who's a great spokesperson and author on that subject. You know, so a different variety of different areas I've always been investing in. You know, including creating educational opportunities for all and providing ladders of success for those that have been left behind. So I did all of these different projects over the last three decades, just something which is just close to my heart, is trying to help in every area that I think I can help in. But as a matter of politics, I was always behind the scenes. I did help candidates, you know, in grassroots activism around the country on the Republican side. That was my background. But, you know, this, you know, brings me to today, I felt all of a sudden that somehow our leadership wasn't good enough. I always figured there were other leaders that could do better, but I don't feel that way anymore, and decided to step forward and see if I could help bring back together a divided country and run against the divider in chief of the Senate, Senator Warren.
That's funny, and that's a beautiful segue, because I did want to ask you why you're deciding to throw your hat into the ring against an incumbent, and looking at the political environment where I cannot recall, maybe you could, I don't know where we stand as far as in age, but I can't remember seeing a country so divided, although probably 20, 30 years ago, we didn't have to worry about social media and seeing that divide. What made you want to get involved with things as divided as they are?
Well, that is exactly the reason I'm in this, is that I have not seen this degree of division in my lifetime. Hypothetically, it might have been when I was a very young man. I was in the late 60s. I was born in 65, so I don't remember it. But the time of the clash at the end of Jim Crow and the Civil Rights era, and the battles over the Vietnam War, the assassinations of 1968, that period, certainly in the ballpark of what we're talking about now. But in my lifetime that I recall, there's nothing been this way. And I just see, it breaks my heart, the degree of division in this country. And I think is worst of all, honestly, is that it's not everywhere. It's not when neighbors are talking to neighbors in Brockton, or local ball teams or civic initiatives or businesses. It's not in the streets. It's not amongst the people. It's in our leadership right now, and that's what's so troubling. It's Washington driven division, as far as I'm concerned, and the sitting senator from Massachusetts that I'm running against, Senator Warren, is the divider in chief of the Senate. I cannot think of a more divisive, polarizing figure in the Senate than Senator Warren. And so the opportunity to try to bring our country back closer together by striking a blow at one form of the extremism and one form of the division, Senator Warren's form, was something which I thought I had to try to do it as somebody who loves this country and wants to do the best for him.
If I may quote you from your website, I see a world in which people are at their best when they're free to pursue their dreams, to invent, create, invest, labor, and produce. Talk to me about the importance of a campaign where you are focusing on the economy and jobs.
Well, the words on the website which you read, and thanks for sharing them, it's basically, if you'd imagine, when it comes down to the general election this fall, and people making choices between Senator Warren and me, they'll be making choices between somebody who's got a vision for dividing the country, all of her polarizing, divisive words, and a vision for driving things out of Washington in a big state sort of way. And look, my basic concept is, we're not getting good results out of Washington now. Why do you want even more put into Washington, like socialized health care, for example? So the contrast between Senator Warren and me is that she's a divisive figure, and I want to bring people together and see the good of all of us to work up and down the ideological and racial and ethnic spectrum to work together. That's number one. And number two is, she wants to drive decision-making more and more to Washington, and I want it to be the strength and power and potential of the people unleashed, which means always making sure the regulatory environment is rightly sized to provide not too much overhang from Washington or from Beacon Hill, that the tax environment's the right one to encourage productivity and creativity. And then we trust the people. We trust the people of this country, which I do. I trust the people of Massachusetts to do better than bureaucrats in Washington, want to choose for them. So that's where the driver of all of those words, Kevin.
If I could, during your answer, you touched upon health care. How important is it that somewhere in the near future that our leaders down in Washington focus on putting together a comprehensive health plan for Americans to supersede Obamacare, which I know that has been kind of taken apart by this current administration?
Well, you know, it's absolutely incumbent on our leadership to really address that in a meaningful and bipartisan way. And you know, and when I say that, you know where I'm coming from on that. When Obamacare was passed, it was passed on a straight line partisan vote. And that was the first time in modern American history where something so significant of a social welfare legislation had been passed without the participation of both parties. What happens when legislation is passed that way is it undermines the credibility of our leadership. People know that good things come when Americans largely are buying in, not just one party driving some things through and ramrodding it through, and not having, you know, as you know, Nancy Pelosi famously said, you know, we'll have to pass it to know what it says. You know, we'll have to pass it to read it. You know, and there's a lot about Obamacare, which you know, there's so many different dimensions of the healthcare, you know, crisis right now, and so much to take on. But we all know it's broken. We all know it's not fixing the problem. We all know it's layering on more and more and more levels of regulation and administration rather than helping out in common sense ways to let people, you know, get good healthcare. And so everybody knows it needs to be fixed. And you know, and yet the Democrats are pretending that there's no fixes that can be made. Let's just keep it the same. And the Republicans are not trying to find you know, some sort of common ground to change it in ways that would be palatable to Democrats.
Okay, we are speaking to John Kingston. He is a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate. And, of course, you're listening to Monday Night Talk as we are bringing you Mr. Kingston and you know, where he kind of stands and some of the stuff that he's running on. The other big issue I think a lot of Americans are paying attention to, watching the Trump administration, Mr. Kingston, is immigration reform, DACA. Do we build a border wall? And now we're talking trade war, where things are flaring up between the United States and China. We're talking about tariffs. Give me your thoughts as far as how we stand, not only with immigration, but our foreign policy when it comes to trade.
Well, you know, immigration is I use it all the time as a great example about how we're much more united than our divisive leaders on either side, you know, will suggest we will. You know, we as Americans, we as the people of Massachusetts, believe three principles, you know, by and large. There's 75% of the voters of Massachusetts would like enhanced border security, right? It's an uncontroversial concept, right, to establish the rule of law applying to how we order the people who come across our borders. So it's not a controversial principle. How it's best achieved, you know, gets controversial based upon the way, you know, people demagogue this and use you know, words to inflame the passions of people. But 75% of the people want that. 75% of the people also want no sanctuary cities. They want illegal aliens that are here that commit criminal acts to be sent back. It's a very straightforward principle. Almost everybody agrees with that. And then 75% or more believe that people who are here and are law-abiding citizens now, you know, based upon the choices made by their parents, they're consequentially here, the so-called DACA, or Dreamer kids, you know, they want them to figure out a way to be able to stay. And so somehow or other, everybody agrees on all the basics of it, and yet nothing gets done, and everybody gets angry about it. And that is something, that's the kind of environment that I want to go to Washington to fix, that we're not getting angry and polarized and at each other's throats on things that we actually, you know, tend to fundamentally agree on.
I definitely, and I agree with you on that, and then I agree that we are divided. It seems as though, you know, when our leaders can't find a common ground, a middle-of-the-road concept that everybody can agree upon, I think that frustrates Americans even more as well. Don't you agree?
Completely agree. Completely agree. And, you know, I was just with a pollster a couple of days ago who does focus groups around the country, and she was observing to me that no matter what the age group, no matter which side of the political divide people are on, the focus groups are saying to her that people, Americans, are feeling anxious. There's a sense of chaos and a feeling of that divide, and that polls you know, in her discussions with people as the number one issue, that people you know, in a time of relative prosperity. You talked about jobs before. You know, of course we can always do better. Of course we can create better economic, productivity, all of which I think, you know, happen more in an environment in which the, you know, Washington stabilizing us rather than making things more volatile. But what people are saying over and over and over again to her is, the number one concern is, I feel like we're divided, and I feel chaos in the air. Now, they blame different people for it, but they all, you know, both sides agree that their biggest problem is the country feels really off and divided. So
it's
that is what I'm in this race to address, to give people more hope, more certainty, right, more, you know, possibility that we can run a country that is in line with our highest aspirations.
So that question was kind of just to set up my next question. And again, folks, we're not going to be able to get through all the issues that Mr. Kingston wants to address during his campaign, and that, if he is elected, would like to tend to. If you want to find out more about JohnKingston.com, great website, probably one of the last things I want to touch on with you, John. We talk about divide, and that divide has caused issues when it comes to putting together a federal budget, kicking the can down the road a couple of months until everybody gets back together again and go, yeah, no, you're not going to give me what I want, so I'm not going to give you what you want. You have a nice initiative here, no budget, no pay. Kind of explain that, if you will.
Yeah, the package that I'm bringing to Washington, what I'm asking the voters of Massachusetts why I'm asking the voters of Massachusetts to vote for me and to change the dysfunction of Washington, you know, my basic approach to this is, if you like what Washington's giving you, you know, send Senator Warren back. She's perfect for the time. She drives the anger machine. She votes no on nearly everything that even her own side proposes. In fact, she's such an ideologue and a purist. But I'm an outsider candidate going to Washington to reform term limits. You know, I made a term limits pledge. You know, we need to cycle people through Washington, and one of the more noteworthy phrases the president's used, one of the ones I agree with, draining the swamp, changing up the roster of leadership, not making it as entrenched there, number one. Number two, you mentioned the no budget, no pay, no work, no pay. I mean, Senator Reid, for 6 years under his watch, the Senate didn't propose a budget, which, you know, how is that possible? It's an absolute outrage. It's a fundamental not doing your job, and we shouldn't stand for that. You know, we need to change the way it's working so that everybody has to do their jobs to get paid. Now, a third reform that I'm looking at and would be leaning into is to create a problem solvers caucus of independent minded Republicans and Democrats reaching across the divide. And if you have a handful of senators and the Senate that are willing to do that, we could change the dynamic of the Senate per night. So those are the things I'm going to Washington to do, to deliver a better form of leadership to our country, to people in Massachusetts, so results can be delivered for hardworking men and women of Massachusetts who just don't want to be listened to this out of Washington.
And if you don't mind me indulging in another demographic, I know, I believe that some of the information I have here, in your youth, that you were a sports guy, you kind of gravitated towards baseball and basketball, still the same way these days?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I love sports. My family loves sports. You know, I follow everything closely and get to a lot of Sox games and a lot of Celtics games. I get to see more Patriots games than I'd like, but follow everything as closely as possible. Deep down in the Kingston family blood. So,
any disappointment that the Celtics may not have as good a chance without Kyrie Irving this year?
You know, yeah, of course. I mean, my goodness, what a remarkable story this year, right? How snake bit we were. It seems now, on the one hand, with Gordon Hayward going out, and then now Kyrie Irving's infection in his knee, that they're having to sideline him. That makes you really sad because you wonder what could have been. On the other hand, how exciting is it going to be to go into the playoffs with Terry Rozier playing great, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, you know, a rookie, a second year and a third year player just tearing it up out there, and seeing what the future holds. So I. I really am sorry that we're not going to have our best unit out there, but I think for a young and growing team, I think Celtics Nation is going to have some fun in this postseason watching those guys, just put it out there. And I definitely see them taking a series or two.
Excellent. Well, listen, I want to thank you so much for joining us here on Monday Night Talk. Anything you want to say to the voters, anybody who is out there on the fence, because you're going to have a primary and folks are going to have to decide as to what's going to happen and who is actually going to end up facing off against Elizabeth Warren. But you're out there campaigning now. What do you want to say to the voters out there about your campaign?
Well, to Republicans or independents who want to vote in the primary, I said, look, if you wanted the best shot to take on Senator Warren, I'm clearly your best shot based upon the message of bringing people together, the manpower, a full-on campaign we've been running since the very beginning, a general election of strategy and resources to drive that. We've got $3 million driving this, all of this together. Which is just very, very, very large resources for the situation. So for the people out there in the general election, you probably won't be tuning into this too closely until later on in the year. And as I said earlier, if you like what you're getting out of Washington right now, send Elizabeth Warren back. She's perfect for the time. If you want change, if you think that the way we do it in Massachusetts, the way that Governor Baker works with the folks on Beacon Hill is the right way, then think John Kingston's a guy that's going to go to Washington and get it done in line with the spirit of Massachusetts and serving Massachusetts people.
I want to thank you again for joining us, John.
Pleasure to be with you, and thank you to all your listeners.
And just folks, again, get informed about the candidate. Our guest, John Kingston, our guest. Check out his website, johnkingston.com. We're going to step aside for just a couple of moments, but when we come back, more program Monday Night Talk here on 95.9 WATD.
This weight loss segment brought to you by Signature Healthcare, providing a team approach to weight loss, including medical and surgical options. Here's Dr. Deborah Abeles, chief of Signature Healthcare's Weight and Wellness Center in Brockton.
When it comes to medical or surgical weight loss, patients now have more options than ever before. At our practice, we're always trying to guide patients to the option that makes the most sense for them. So for some, that may mean surgery to help them lose weight, put their diabetes into remission, or reduce the number of medications that they take. However, there are also less invasive options like our 12-week doctor-supervised medical weight loss program. Patients work with our dietitian and lifestyle counselors while receiving ongoing physician consultation to make sure they are losing weight safely and effectively.
To learn more about Dr. Abeles and see if Signature Healthcare's medical and surgical weight loss approaches may be right for you, visit mysignaturecare.org/weightloss.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
Follow Monday Night Talk on Twitter. Start at 959WATD.com/Monday Night Talk. And don't forget to add hashtag Monday Night Talk to your tweets. And now, more Monday Night Talk with your host, Kevin Tachi.
Welcome back to Monday Night Talk. Again, teasing next hour, hour number two of Monday Night Talk. We have a Marshfield Selectmen's Forum, of course. Christine James, your moderator. Stay tuned for that. But we have Marshfield's own Casey Sherman back, and I was saying to him during the break that it's too bad we couldn't give him more time, because this is a guy who, while we're going to talk about a fantastic new book on the eve of it being at bookstores, the launch of it, guy deserves like an hour, probably a whole show, because there's so many things that he's doing that he's in the middle of. We'll let him tease that, but primarily, Casey's here to talk about his new book, Above and Beyond, that is going to be in stores. Welcome back to Monday Night Talk, sir.
We meet again, Kevin. Thanks for having me, my friend.
We do. We haven't had you since, I think you were kind enough to come to the Senior Center.
That's right.
Down in Kingston and be a part of a fantastic show.
Yeah, no, and I missed you. So it's a great opportunity. This is why I write so many books, for an excuse for you and I to hang out a little bit. But thank you for having me. We're really excited for the launch of our new book, Above and Beyond. And anybody that loved the book, The Finest Hours, or the film, The Finest Hours, Above and Beyond is the follow-up to that book. It's the first book co-written by myself and Michael Togas since that great maritime rescue that we wrote a few years ago. This is book obviously is a little different.
Yeah, talk to us about it, because it's coming at a time, you're releasing the book at a perfect time, because there are things that are in the theater. You got the movie Chappaquiddick, which was recently launched in the theaters. It's not showing the Kennedy family in the proper light. Kind of talk to us about the story behind Above and Beyond.
Sure. Well, Above and Beyond is a very intimate look at the Cuban Missile Crisis in 1962. And Kevin, you mentioned the film Chappaquiddick. There's also a miniseries on CNN right now called The Kennedys, which is an interesting introduction to the dynasty, the political dynasty. The Kennedys are like the Kardashians right now, because it's really, you know, you've had a resurgence of interest in the family, and the majority of that is negative. I didn't know that these projects were in development when we were writing Above and Beyond, but Above and Beyond really focuses on the critical thinking of President John F. Kennedy during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and also tells the very important and intimate stories of the reconnaissance pilots that were flying missions, critical missions, over Cuba during those fateful 13 days in October 1962, when the world came the closest it ever has to thermonuclear war.
Yeah, that's where I believe the Russians had nuclear weapons. They had missiles implanted in Cuba.
Yeah, so Nikita Khrushchev and the Russians, the Soviets at the time, they were installing offensive weapons, missiles, in Cuba. Mm. And that evidence was discovered by these reconnaissance pilots that were flying over the island and noticing the missiles, the launch pads, erectors, etc. You know, they raised the alarm bell to President Kennedy. And it's interesting that the book is coming out at a time where the United States is confronting a new Russia and Syria. And we've got a commander-in-chief right now that obviously doesn't hold anything back publicly or on social media. You know, it's a lot of cyber saber-rattling. In my estimation, just a few days ago, as we all know, President Trump warned Russia that without saying the word missile, something would be flying new and smart their way, which to me was very frightening. When Kennedy first realized that the missiles were being installed in Cuba and would be operational within 2 weeks, he had a decision to make. And originally, he felt like Trump, that he wanted to knock out those missiles very quickly. Had he done that, though, the world would have moved closer to nuclear war. You knock out the missiles in Cuba, suddenly the Soviets roll tanks in West Berlin, and now things are spiraling out of your control, and generals on both sides were eager to push that nuclear button. What Kennedy did over 13 days is his thinking began to evolve, and it's amazing the research that we did on this book, spending a lot of time at the JFK archives, at the JFK library, and listening to the audio taped recordings for these XCOM meetings. Basically, XCOM meant it was a group of the senior president's most senior advisors discussing their military options at the time, and hearing Kennedy's very cogent and thoughtful remarks during those days and watching his thinking evolve, to me, that is a testament of to true leadership. Now, we were talking over the break, Kevin, that I grew up on Cape Cod, so I grew up in Hyannis. I have a different idea of the Kennedys because, you know, we always saw them around town, and it wasn't a great feeling I had about the family. So I went into this project with a little chip on my shoulder toward the family, and I was turned around by Kennedy's decision-making, and we make the correlation for the first time as to why Kennedy was so measured in his response. And I believe that it is because he was the first modern-day American president who had experienced combat firsthand.
Yep.
You know, we know that he was a commander of a PT boat in the Solomon Islands in the Second World War. And one fateful night that we write about in the book, his PT boat is split in half by a Japanese destroyer. Two members of his crew die. But then over the course of the next 8 days, I should say, John F. Kennedy does everything in his ability and skills to save his crew. And that means swimming from island to island with a burned crew member on his back in shark-infested waters, Japanese patrolled waters, all in an effort to save them. And he did.
He personified the word hero.
He really did. And going back to my initial reaction to the Kennedy family, I'd heard that story growing up. I watched the film PT-109 with Cliff Robertson. I thought that was mythology. I thought that was legend-making, you know, probably perpetrated by Joseph Kennedy, John F. Kennedy's father, for political motivation.
Sure.
But reading the naval transcripts from that actual operation, and you get to see exactly what this young 27-year-old lieutenant commander in the U.S. Navy did to save his crew, yes, you're right. You know, I don't throw the word around hero too often, but he was an absolute hero in that particular event. And as I said, I think obviously that stayed with him through the course of his life. And when he became president, he didn't look at these soldiers or these sailors as simply numbers. He knew that they were human beings and that those human beings' lives could be lost if he made the wrong move. Fortunately, he made the right one.
And it's interesting. We do a compare and contrast between the current administration and us being on the brink of war, not only with North Korea, but now there's, as you said, cyber saber rattling with Syria and Russia. And knowing that, is there critical thinking going on behind the scenes? Yet you've been able to do some research to realize what happened back, 50 years ago, if not more, that, you know, that this was something that a lot went into making sure we did not have a war that would have taken many lives.
That would have taken 500 million lives over the course of the world. I didn't realize, Kevin, that how close we came to thermonuclear war. We were a hair trigger away from the destruction of Western civilization, and I'm not understating that. Learning through the transcripts and through a myriad of different interviews that we conducted over the course of our research, it was really frightening to understand this. Now, the reason why I was always fascinated by the Cuban Missile Crisis is because my father, Donnie Sherman, was a U.S. Marine in 1962, and he had actually been moved to southern Florida to be part of that first invasion wave to Cuba, should Kennedy give that order. There's a great likelihood that I wouldn't be alive to have this interview right now.
Oh, wow.
That particular invasion, Kevin, was expected to be the largest amphibian invasion since D-Day.
Wow.
That's how big it was. And what the Americans didn't know at the time was that the Soviets were equipped at the time with mobile nuclear weapons. So they, you know, American Marines would have been absolutely annihilated on the beaches of Cuba if we were to invade. And then the buttons would have been pushed. Now, one of the things that we also really talk about in the book, as I said, are the missions of these U-2 pilots. And that's really, to me, where I strike the correlation between the finest hours and above and beyond. In the finest hours, you had a group of Coast Guardsmen given training, can do extraordinary things. Mm. And very selfless in their courage. These U-2 pilots were cut from the same cloth. They were the best pilots in the world at the time, and it's interesting. I'm a big fan of Tom Wolfe's The Right Stuff, and the film is one of my favorite films of all time.
Same here.
And that focuses on the Mercury 7 astronauts that began the space exploration program. They were part of this collection of the best and brightest fighter pilots and reconnaissance pilots in the U.S. military. And what the government did was split them in half. You know, half of them went to Mercury 7. The other half went to this very top secret U-2 program. And probably the best pilot in the bunch outside of John Glenn, who's a hero of mine, is Rudy Anderson. Rudy Anderson was a major in the United States Air Force. He was a reconnaissance pilot. He was a pacifist. And he did not agree with war. He abhorred it. But he felt like he could actually protect his country by flying reconnaissance missions over enemy territory. And he is thrust into the spotlight in the Cuban Missile Crisis, flying more missions over Cuba, retrieving 6,000 feet of film during each mission. That film obviously exposed the Soviet Union's real intentions. And on October 27th, 1962, what we call Black Saturday, Rudy Anderson, flying his fifth mission over Cuba, is shot down and killed by the Soviets.
Wow. That voice you hear, that's the one and only Casey Sherman talking, giving you little details in regards to the new book, Above and Beyond, published tomorrow.
Published tomorrow.
Available?
Available everywhere. We're really excited about this. I will be signing books this coming Saturday, the 21st, beginning at noon at Barnes & Noble at Derby Street in Hingham. I hope anybody listening who wants a signed copy will come in. We can have a nice chat there. But if you don't see me there, please pick up the book because, as I said, it's a lesson in leadership, something that is so important in the times that we're living right now.
And you have to understand, if you're a fan of Casey Sherman, the writing style and how he writes his books, as well as some of the productions. This is, again, a gentleman who doesn't just do one project. He has a number of irons in the fire. We got a couple of minutes left with you. Well, how are some of your other projects going? We know you for the Ice Bucket Challenge. We know that you got your production company, and there's a lot going on. I follow you on social media, this whole thing about pirate DNA and stuff.
Ah, yeah.
What's going on?
Well, the pirate story is really fascinating. I've partnered with Barry Clifford, the renowned diver and salvager on Cape Cod. He's the one that found the world's only authenticated pirate ship off the coast of Cape Cod back in 1984. And just recently, Barry and his dive team found a human bone in the wreck. And we are currently testing that that bone for DNA to determine whether it is that of the legendary pirate captain Black Sam Bellamy. Now, Black Sam was born and raised in England, so I just returned from a trip to the UK where I was able to track down Black Sam Bellamy's bloodline descendant and extract his DNA for testing here in the United States. So that test is being done right now at the University of New Haven in Connecticut, and we hope to learn within a few weeks whether or not we've found the notorious pirate captain. So it's exciting.
Definitely exciting. And again, keep that information coming. If folks want to kind of follow some of the stuff that you're doing, website, social media.
Yeah.
How do you want your fans to follow you?
You can just follow me on Facebook. Just friend me on Facebook. Follow me on Twitter. I don't have a website because there's no interaction there. I really love to have a dialogue and communication with my readers. And a lot of times I will find new projects through those conversations. Dave Wedge, my partner on Boston Strong and Ice Bucket Challenge, we're just finishing up a book on Tom Brady that comes out July 31st, and it's called 12, and that book really focuses on Brady's battle with the NFL over the entire Deflategate issue, and it's a story, it's a tale about corporate America, as much as it is a sports story, and the information and evidence that we found in our research is explosive.
Again, Casey Sherman, our guest for this segment. Just a reminder before we close out our number one of Monday Night Talk. Casey will be doing a book signing this Saturday at the Barnes & Noble. That is at the Hingham Derby Street Shops. What's the time again?
That is, I'll be there from noon till about 1:30.
Okay. I would be over there if I was you. Put it on your calendar. He's a great guy to talk to, and this is a fantastic new book. If you're a history buff and you want to kind of get the inside, this is a great book about a time in our history, a very dark time. With someone who, you know, with an individual who I think, you know, as Casey illustrated earlier on in the conversation, we kind of look at the Kennedys as the Kardashians of politics, so to speak. So it's interesting that this book is coming out. Anything you want to say just to kind of close out our segment, my friend?
Thank you, Kevin, again, for your support and the support of your listeners, you know, over several years. You know, this is, you know, one of the most auspicious efforts that I've undertaken as a writer. It's a massive tome. There's a lot of information in Above and Beyond, but it, you know, I think it's also a really great story, and it's very inspirational and aspirational. And as I said, if anybody you know, loved our book, The Finest Hours in the Film, I hope you pick up Above and Beyond.
Above and Beyond, John F. Kennedy and America's Most Dangerous Cold War Spy Mission, out in stores everywhere tomorrow. So be sure to pick up your copy and stop on by this Saturday at the Barnes & Nobles in Hingham, the Derby Street Shops. Say hello to Casey from 12 to 1:30. We're going to step aside, and when we come back, hour number two will be your Marshfield Selectmen's Forum, moderated by the one and only Christine James. Again, you're listening to Monday Night Talk here, 95.9 WAT.
The South Shore's breaking news, weather, and traffic station.
95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.
McGuigan's Pub in downtown Whitman is a great place to unwind any night of the week. Stop in for Singo on Monday night. There's the always popular Irish Sessions every Tuesday night, half-price pizza every Wednesday night, and Friday and Saturday nights feature the best in live entertainment. Catch your favorite game on McGuigan's 8 big flat screens and enjoy a pint at their beautiful 54-foot mahogany bar. Whether you're a regular or coming in for the first time, you're always a friend of McGuigan's Pub, 546 Washington Street, Whitman Center.
I'm Tiny of Tiny & Sons Glass. Broken windshield? Insurance covers it. Tiny works with all insurance companies.
Hey, Dad, we work with Allstate?
Yes, we do.
How about Amica?
Yes,
how about Arbella?
Very good.
And Commerce?
Very nice.
Even Geico?
Geico, yes.
Hanover?
Hanover Insurance, good people.
Liberty Mutual is supposed to be pretty good.
Liberty Mutual? Yes, sir.
MetLife?
MetLife, yes.
Pilgrim?
Pilgrim, I know them.
Hey, Plymouth Rock. How about Plymouth Rock?
Plymouth Rock, excellent.
All right, Progressive, I heard. And Safety?
Safety. Safety is my friend.
And those guys at Tower Group, I thought they were tough, but they've been pretty good lately.
They should buy me lunch.
That's right. And how about USAA, the troops?
USAA is perfect.
We support the troops. We work with them all.
My dad did a great job. 1-888-64-TINYS. Just call.
Download the Monday Night Talk podcast from iTunes for free. Just search for Monday Night Talk WATD. We now return to Kevin Tachi and Monday Night Talk.
Good evening and welcome to a WATD Political Forum. I'm Christine James, your moderator, here on Monday Night Talk. And today, the town is Marshfield. The race is for selectmen. We have incumbent Michael Bradley and challenger Thomas Vasirka Jr. Now, joining me to ask questions, of course, WATD's Monday Night Talk host, Kevin Tachi, along with WATD reporter Charles Mathewson. Our media partner here is Marshfield Community Television. Hello, everybody. Good morning.
Good morning.
Hello. Our format is simple. We have candidates with opening and closing statements. Try to keep that to about 2 minutes. In between, we ask a round of questions, including the famous lightning round, where the reporter will ask for either a two-sentence answer or yes or no. Lightning round means lightning round. It means yes or no without a long explanation, or if we say two sentences, two sentences is two sentences. And if we have time, which I hope we will, we let the candidates ask each other a question or two. Since it's only two candidates here, I'm going to be a little looser with the one-minute rule for answering questions so we can have it more like a conversation. But as I told both candidates earlier, if you start to ramble or repeat yourself, the bell means stop talking.
Gasp.
That's right. And we choose. We just chose opening and closing order from the official WATD newsroom koozie moments ago. So Mike Bradley will begin with a two-minute statement, and then Thomas Fraserka will make his opening statement. We'll reverse that order at the end for closing statements. So remember, the race is for Marshfield Selectman. The election, I believe, is April 28th. Let's start now with the opening statement of Mike Bradley.
Well, thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here. The last 3 years have been great. As a selectman in Marshfield, the last 3 years, we've accomplished a lot. Together, we successfully challenged the FEMA flood maps and got a lot of people that were in the original FEMA zone out of the FEMA zone, as those maps were based on poor science. We continue to challenge the zones within the FEMA structure, and we're hoping to get several hundred more residents out of the zones that don't need it. We want the people on the coast that need the insurance to have it, but the people that don't certainly don't need it. We also recently broke ground on the state-of-the-art Maritime Center, which is partially constructed. It's a great joint-use facility in one of our it's the fourth busiest fishing commercial port in Massachusetts. We made significant strides in town hall towards improving efficiency and morale, which is very important because we want people to go to work and be as happy as they can at their jobs, and we've done a good job at that over the last 3 years. And we specifically restructured the treasurer's office, which was in disarray when I came in, and now it's in such great shape it's really a model for efficiency. And the real reason I'm running again is I'm not done. It takes a lot of time to get things done on this level. We've been working hard. We're midstream on a lot of projects. Continuity of government is important. There's a lot of projects that I want to continue to work with Town Hall to continue to improve not only the services we offer our residents, but the quality of life for our employees. In addition to that, there's a veterans housing project at the old Hancock Paint Store, also known as the South Grammar School. Money has been allocated by the Affordable Housing, Marshfield Affordable Housing, to put together with a nonprofit group to restore the historical value of the building to make it useful again. Right now, it's in complete disrepair. There's really no use for it. So when we do this, it not only makes it useful again, it restores the historic value of the building and creates 8 single units for veterans housing. In addition to that, we, as most communities on the South Shore and everywhere, work with our police to combat the opioid epidemic. We have a drug task force in town. The drug task force does not compete with other towns. What they do is centralize the information, offer education services, and opportunity for everybody that needs help.
Thank you very much. That was the opening statement from Mike Bradley. Now let's go to Thomas Fraserka.
My name is Thomas Fraserka, Jr. I am married to my lovely wife, Angela, for 12 years. We have 2 children, my son Tommy, who's 7 years old, and my daughter Gianna, who's 5. I attended Catholic Memorial High School. After high school, I went into the trades, became a master electrician, recently moved down here about 3 years ago, but our family has had a house down here since 1954. So, watching what goes on in the town, I felt as though instead of complaining about things, it would be my time to step up and try to help. And I feel as though some of the experiences I've had in life and, you know, working for the Postal Service and so forth, that I would be a good addition to the Board of Selectmen. And I would ask for your vote on the 28th.
Thank you very much. That's the opening statement, Thomas Fraserka. Now let's go to our reporters to have them ask questions. Let's start with Kevin Tachi, because this is your segment here on Monday Night Talk. Kevin, your questions for the candidates and who they're directed at.
We'll start with Mike, and this is a question for both candidates. A year ago at this time, WATD held a similar forum, although they were 3 selectman candidates. One of the issues that was focused on was a problem with how people communicate in town hall or how departments work with each other. In your opinion, have things changed? If yes, what was done to improve the situation? If no, what do you feel should be done to stimulate better communications? Mike?
Well, thank you for the question. This is something I've been working on since I came in 3 years ago. The communication between the different departments is difficult and strained at best. There has been some improvement. We always try to improve it. But the problem is that we have too many departments that operate independently from one another. Those departments need to continue to try to work with one another under the direction of the town administrator to work together in a collaborative effort to get things done, to maximize our potential, and to make sure that we stay within the confines of a reasonable budget.
How has Mike Maresco done in regards to being able to pull the departments together and do stuff, and at least improve services at Town Hall? How has he been an asset?
Well, first of all, Rocco Longo did a great job for years.
Yep.
And Mike Maresco has completed the transition and is working very hard. And he's doing a great job at reaching out to each individual departments and other elected boards to bridge the gap and to make things run more efficiently. Mike's doing a great job.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the best decisions we made since we got here.
Okay. Thomas, same question, sir.
Do you mind just repeating it again?
Absolutely. A year ago when we held a forum like this, one of the issues or topics that we discussed was problems with how people communicate in Town Hall and how the departments work with each other. Have things changed in your opinion? If yes, what do you feel was done to improve the situation? If no, what do you feel can be done to make things better when it comes to communicating?
I do think it has changed with some of the environment as far as people being more personal when you go in there and not miserable as they seem to be before. But as far as the departments working together, I've still yet to see that. I think we still need a building inspector. We don't have a building commissioner yet. And my interactions with some of the commissions, they are independently on their own, and I believe they have their own agenda, because what would be common sense and what would be the law or the rules, they don't follow. And I just feel as though somebody has to rein these people in and put them all on the same page. And I don't believe that's happening.
And how do you feel that whether it's the Rocco Longo, the former town administrator, or the current Mike Maresco, how they have done in regards to making it either better or at least trying to move it forward?
I believe it's still kind of early to tell. I mean, it seems like he's really trying hard. So I'd like to give him the benefit of the doubt. And with a little bit more time, I believe we'd probably have a better answer.
Okay.
Okay. Charles Mathewson, questions for the candidates here.
Related to interdepartmental communication, Marshfield is considering a new charter that might solve some of these problems, might create some more chaos depending on how it's implemented. The charter would include an increase from 3 to 5 selectmen, a fairly strong town manager that all of the departments would report to. Mike, I know the board has supported in general the charter change. What do you like best about it, and what would you prefer to see get some more work?
Thank you for the question. The charter change is a group of people that have been working for over 2 years to develop best practices. And while I agree with the majority of what they've done, I don't agree with all of that. I'm not sure you can put a lot of people in a room and you'll ever agree. However, some of the redundancies they seek to eliminate are other elected boards, not to eliminate them, but to consolidate them under the Board of Selectmen. And that's why they propose to go to 3 to 5. So there's some people that are on these boards, like Steve Robbins and John Valera, that are doing a good job. And I want them to actually run for selectmen if this were to occur. We've had these discussions. But I think one of the great things they do is to consolidate the different elected boards that are seemingly constantly in friction with each other, not only for services, but for funds and resources. So if you combine them together, it certainly streamlines the form of government. It puts all the employees under the direction of the town manager. Now, the description of the town manager is something that will be voted up or down at town meeting.
Do you mind if I ask a follow-up question here?
I know what you're going to ask.
And this is the question I still have never been able to get a straight answer on. One of the things that is proposed is getting rid of the Board of Public Works. And the answer that I have gotten, well, we want to make things run more smoothly. Can anybody give me a specific example of screw-ups for the Board of Public Works? Because that has not been my experience.
Well, I'm not going to sit here and tell you that. First of all, the employees of the Department of Public Works do a great job.
They do.
When you have the leadership of the Department of Public Works is doing a good job.
Mm-hmm.
However, we're on two different planes. We have the Board of Selectmen and the Department of Public Works, both seeking to manage their employees. When you have too many, what's the phrase? Too many chefs spoil the soup. You know, you need one top-down form of government, and that is the only way to streamline things and make it efficient. And I do, again, want to say that John Blair and Steve Robbins are doing a good job. It's better than it has been. But I'm not going to sit here and tell you things that they've done wrong and things they haven't done wrong. The major problem is communication. The major problem is getting all employees under one town manager. And right now, the employees do not answer to Mike Maresco for the Department of Public Works. They answer to Tom Reynolds. And Tom Reynolds, if he chooses, does not have to speak to Mike Maresco. That system simply doesn't work. You need everybody answering to one group of people.
But be specific. It's just like you talk about management structure. What has happened that has put this idea forth? Did something get messed up? Because I'm just hearing all these things about management, this management structure. What happened? It doesn't make sense to me.
The management structure itself, just for the question, immediately puts each department at odds, scrambling for resources. In addition to that, the Department of Public Works has a budget. They have failed to maintain, to stay within their budget, I believe, for the last seven consecutive years. Moreover, this would be better run if it was under the direction of one supervisor for all the departments, and that supervisor answered to one board.
Okay. Let me ask you a follow-up question now. Tom, I'll let you go back to you, Charlie. What do you think about this whole question that I'm trying to get an answer to about Board of Public Works? Should be eliminated, or you think there's a personality conflict, or what's going on here?
I don't think the Board of DPW should be eliminated at all. I think it should stay the way it is. In my feeling, from watching what's gone on and seeing the personalities, there is definitely a personality conflict between one member and the other two, and with the selectmen. It's obvious if you pay attention and watch it. I believe, to me, it seemed like it was more punitive because a certain individual, Mr. Cusack, had brought forward about the enterprise account where money was taken out of that shouldn't have been. And for a town meeting, it was voted on for a forensic audit, and that forensic audit hasn't happened, and it's been 2 years. And I really believe that was part of it, because at the last town meeting, the selectmen agreed to pay back, I believe it was like $256,000 back to the enterprise account. To me, it seems like after that, that's when everything seemed to start going downhill for the Board of DPW, and I believe Tom Reynolds does do a good job. And the DPW does a fantastic job, and I don't think they get credit for what they do.
Okay, that was Thomas Fisurka. Mike Bradley, another comment about the whole issue.
Just to comment on what he's talking about, that's actually inaccurate. It's actually improved. There was an agreement that was started to be crafted by Steve Robbins when he was outgoing as the chair, I believe with Steve Hawking, and then the subsequent chair. That agreement for the enterprise account was to relook at the enterprise account and revamp them. Board of Selectmen did not have to do that, but we worked in an effort because they raised certain concerns that we felt were appropriate. The 256 was an agreement. $250,000 repay was an agreement to offset last year's fiscal balance. Basically, they felt they were owed some money, and we determined that there was a balance that was a little out of whack, and we put it back in order. Now, in terms of the enterprise accounts themselves, we spent a lot of money on the Abrams groups trying to do this. We had a one-page document before this. We have a 30-page document created by a renowned accounting group that most towns don't have. It's now going to be used as a model for other towns. The enterprise accounts, according to one person, Mr. Cusick, are out of whack. Those accounts account for less than 0.5% of the overall budget, and we spent a lot of time on them.
Can I ask who this renowned accounting group is?
The Abrams Group.
Okay. All right. Did you want to make another comment about this whole issue?
No. I mean, my feeling is I believe that the board should stay and should stay elected.
Okay.
The Board of Selectmen have enough to do as it is. I do agree it should go to 5. Because I've watched some meetings when there's only 2 selectmen that show up. So I really believe 2 is not a good show for all the people in town that are voters and everything else. I really believe it should be more.
Okay, Natrella, go back to you.
Okay, to get back to the core question, Tom, with the charter change proposed, what do you like most about it, and what would you like to see more work done?
Well, I like going to 5, as I said, going to 5 Board of Selectmen. I don't like getting rid of the DPW board at all. I don't believe that's going to benefit anybody. Going to a town manager, I'm for that. I believe that would be probably, the town is grown so much, I really believe they do need a change there. I wish when the Charter Review would listen to some of the people that have spoken, because I've been to some of those meetings, and there have been some good ideas that just haven't been instituted or haven't been taken into consideration.
Okay. Charlie, follow up?
So, I look at a lot of towns across the South Shore, and I've seen towns go from executive secretary to town manager to town administrator to town manager. It's always a touchy transition. And with this feud between selectmen and DPW, it promises to be maybe a little more touchy than others. Let's look at the town of Hanover. They got a new town manager, and he was, well, not rehired a few years later. How do you make this transition from multiple boards that each have their own silos, their own special little empires, to having one effective town manager? Mike?
So the transition obviously would be difficult. I mean, all changes, all people are resistant to change. If the changes go through a town meeting, there'll be a transition period, and we'll have an opportunity, I think, at that time to see what worked in the past, to continue to use that and to use the new initiatives to see if the town manager position works. I think the town manager position can work. I think that the Charter Commission has gone a little too far in it. We do need the town manager to control all the town employees. However, I feel there's a perception that the town administrator has too much authority, and the town manager description as written sort of leads into that description. I think the little less authority in terms of going from town administrator to the town manager they propose is too much. So somewhere there's a middle ground that we could find in there, and I'm hoping at town meeting we'll be able to flesh that out.
Okay.
Tom?
Same question.
The town has grown so much, so I really do believe the town manager would be a good option. We're almost at the point where almost we could use a mayor. It's almost getting to that point when you have 25,000 full-time residents, 16,000 voters that are registered, and growing. It seems to be an aging population, and I believe that a transition probably would definitely be difficult because no one likes change. They're always afraid of change, that they're going to lose something and not get something. But I believe it would be worth Marshall looking into it and possibly going to it.
Okay.
One last thing.
Sure.
As far as I know, the concept of representative town meeting was considered very, very briefly by the Charter Commission. Tom, you mentioned mayor. It's a large population. I live in Plymouth. The question of mayor has come up several times in the last 20 years, and it's always been rejected. We do have representative town meeting. Do you think that would be a solution for Marshfield? Representative town meeting as opposed to open?
No, I like the open meeting. I believe that's been working. It seems like it's been working from what I've been watching. So I prefer open meeting so people could have more of a say.
Mike, open meeting or representative?
Part of the mandate for the Charter Review Commission was to take this information from the community and adopt best practices. So when they did that, they did not see an appetite for representative town meeting, and they did see a desire to keep town meeting as is, and as such, they made that recommendation. I think that recommendation was right.
Okay.
Okay. We have Jim Cantwell, of course, to state rep here for just about 10 years, leaving to take another job with a state senator. We're going to have eventually a new state representative here in Marshfield. Jim Cantwell's been very good about bringing home the bacon to this district with Marshfield and most of Scituate. How do you think the town is going to change with a new state rep, somebody who's considered a freshman? Do you think it's going to make a difference? Will that help the town, hurt the town? Thomas Vasirka, and who do you support in that race?
Right now, I don't have anybody that I'm supporting. I believe there's some more candidates that still haven't announced that they were going to run yet. As far as there's always going to be a learning curve whenever you move into a new job, so I hope that Marshall in the district will not suffer, but with that learning curve, you got to get to know the people, get to know you know, how things work. So there's going to be a little time that's going to need to be, and hopefully, you know, we don't lose anything at all, any representation at all or anything.
Okay. Mike Bradley, same question. What do you think?
And first of all, let me thank Jim Cantwell for as many years of service. As you said, Jim was bringing home the bacon, and he did do a great job of bringing resources to this town specifically for seawall repair, created a bill not only with the state funding and federal funding we get, but also provided a separate bill to get funding for that because we're constantly repairing our seawalls, and he did a good job with that. Replacing him is going to be difficult. Certainly, there's going to be a loss of service in the interim, no matter what anybody tells you, but I know that Gigi Marazzi's staff is going to do a great job in providing constituent service while he's gone. And Senator O'Connor is great. He spends a lot of time down here. He's going to have to pick up the slack while Jim is gone. In terms of replacing him, there's several candidates. Sean Costello is the chair of the school committee. He's done a great job there. He's got a lot of energy, and I think he's going to be great at that job. So I support Sean Costello.
Okay. Any follow-up questions about that? Okay. Let's go back to Kevin Tachi.
My turn?
Yes, your turn. My your turn, Mr. Tachi.
No.
Is he still here? My only follow-up would be I saw Jim on his first day on his new job as state director for U.S. Senator Ed Markey, and he was so happy. He was giddy. He was like a child. It was great to see that he... It was just great to see him happy.
Thank you for that editorial, Charles.
Certainly.
All right. So from what I understand, gentlemen, you both seem to be fiscally responsible, especially with the limited revenues the town currently receives. Now, we've got town meeting right around the corner, and it's going to consider appropriating funds to hire personnel for four town departments and also open the library on Sundays. This is from what I understand. How do you feel about these requests, and do you feel that the town can afford to fund them long term, beyond fiscal 19.
Who do you want to start with?
We'll start with Thomas.
I'm for the library being open on Sundays. I think that would be a good addition for those that would find more time on a Sunday and be able to go, and children to access the library. I believe that would probably bring more people in with better hours and better availability. As far as the jobs that are open, I believe they have to be filled. They should be filled. Some of them are very important positions that need to be filled.
Okay. Same question, Mike Bradley.
So the library clearly is an important resource, and when the library director reached out to us to suggest this, we did look for the funding. We can fund it, so we should fund it. Clearly, the library should be open on Sunday, and it's going to be. With respect to the four positions that you mentioned, I know that Mr. Vasirka answered it, simply saying, great, this should be filled, but what four positions are you talking about?
I believe you have police, fire, is it not somebody for the Department of Public Works, and also for the senior center?
So the police and fire clearly need to be filled. Both departments need to be level staffed. More, the fire department in the past has been more staffed than the police department. The police department, while we are the 14th safest community, something I'm very proud of, they need funding for additional staff. They lose people through attrition, through retirement, to other departments. And right now, Chief DeForest is doing a great job, along with his staff, managing that. But we need to make a long-term and a short-term commitment to giving him the personnel he needs. So clearly, I support those. I support the additional person at the DPW, however, right now, as we stated before, I do not control that decision. And,
Okay. And sticking on the theme of funding, also up for discussion will be to establish a 3% local sales tax regarding adult recreational marijuana on retail sales in your opinion, depending on the amount that's generated. What do you feel is the best way for the town to utilize those funds?
Well, Mike? Thank you. We've discussed this many times. Because the state and the town adopted not only the recreational marijuana, we can do this, but we actually have to. If we precluded, now that if we precluded companies from doing that, mm-hmm. we'd actually be liable for costing the business. So if they're going to be here, we definitely want to take the max tax revenue from it and apply it to the town. The first thing I think it's going to do, it's going to involve the police. We want the police and some of that funding to go directly to the police to combat drug use and overuse, I would say, on a whole level. So first and foremost, we want to take the tax revenue, but I also want to make sure that some of that revenue stream goes directly to police and fire departments.
Thomas, same question.
Okay, I personally did not vote for the marijuana to be legal. Unfortunately, it is, and like Mike said, we are stuck with that decision. And my belief is if we are going to have to put a facility in, that we should get the maximum taxes that we can get for it, because the town could definitely use the funds, and it should be regulated by the police. Because if you start having people growing it at home, you're not going to be able, the police won't be able to control who has it and how many plants they have. And I really believe if that's the way it's going to be, that it should be in a certain area, away from schools, away from kids, and regulated by the police.
But where do you want to see the revenue go, the revenue that's generated from the 3% local sales tax? Where do you want to see that go in regards to in the general fund, whether it's a department, should it go to the police to help with education? Where do you want to see that money go?
I believe it should go to the police and for education, absolutely, for prevention, teaching kids that maybe at a younger age about it. And you know, so they have, they're better educated, can make better decisions, and, you know, learn from those situations.
Okay, you sat there.
Can right. I just touch on something?
Yeah, sure, Mike Bradley.
It seems like Mr. Basurik is confusing the medical marijuana with recreation marijuana. Two very different things. The revenue stream that comes from the taxing of the recreational marijuana is what the question is. And the answer is simple, is that yes, the money, some of that money should go towards general revenue, some of it should go towards education, and a lot of it should go to police and fire as a dedicated revenue stream for education, outreach, and community policing.
Okay. Question. Charlie?
I have a follow-up on that. Philosophically, do you see legalizing marijuana as letting marijuana into the town, or is regulating it and controlling it? Tom?
I believe it should be regulated and controlled. Being from the city and around the city, people were doing it before. They're going to continue. The only difference I've seen now since it has been legal is you smell it more as cars go by. People aren't afraid to do it in public. You know, just being around in Boston, you can smell it as the cars go by. And so it should be regulated, just like alcohol and everything else is regulated. You know, it is a substance, it is a drug. It does alter decisions, and it should be regulated.
Mike, are we letting pot shops in, or are we regulating the black market?
So the reality is that question's come and gone. The state, and then subsequently this
I know it's come and gone, but philosophically, what's your position on that?
My position would have been no, and I did not vote for it. But the reality is that the town did and the state did, so we're forced to deal with it. So we need, you know, we need to put the resources in to make sure that it's controlled in a responsible manner, and also to make sure that we get the max tax value from it.
Let me ask you a quick follow-up question, then I've got another question for you. Going back to the question of medical marijuana and recreational marijuana, we've spoken about it in very business-like, straightforward terms. This is going to be a game changer for the whole mood and feeling, I think, of a town. I think a lot of people think that way. I'm just throwing this out there. Does this worry you at all? A couple of sentences about what's going to happen in Marshfield.
Oh, I'm definitely concerned about it. I'm definitely worried about it. I believe, you know, the children are influenced at a young age, and I believe it is going to make a difference. I don't believe it's going to be for the better. That's why I think with education and appropriate funding going to that, all we can do is lead them in the right path.
Okay.
And teach them.
Now, Mike Bradley, what do you think? Does this worry you coming into Marshfield?
It absolutely worries me. I spoke to Chief Forrest about it many times. And the medical marijuana discussion is different. It would be more controlled because Chief Tavares would have access and direction and control as to where the facility went and who was getting deliveries and whatnot. For the recreational marijuana, it simply floods the town with marijuana and takes a drug that was illegal and makes it legal. So you're certainly going to have people that used it illegally using it more openly. You're certainly going to have people, specifically children that didn't use it, that may now use it. And I think that's a problem. It's certainly going to increase the amount of police and fire responses that we need to sort of address this issue. And it's going to be problematic, but we're going to have to deal with it because that's what the voters want.
Okay,
Christine, are you going to change direction on your next question, or are you going to stay with
oh,
that?
I just I have another question follow-up, but I also want to remind people what they're listening to. This is a political forum. The town is Marshfield. The race is for selectmen. You got the incumbent here, Mike Bradley, and his challenger, Thomas Fisurka Jr. Now, we're speaking about Chief Tavares, you know, great police chief. A lot of people really respect him, like him in this town. School safety, that's an issue, especially with some of the recent incidents. Where do you think we stand in Marshfield? How safe are the schools here, Mike Bradley?
First of all, Chief Tavares is doing a great job. I spoke with him. I speak with him probably twice a day. And one of the issues we constantly talk about is school safety. So just to let the folks know, we recently had an active shooter forum. that was hosted by Chief DeVars in conjunction with members of the FBI. That was done at the Fernsbrook Middle School, where several hundred parents came out to give information on exactly is what is the town doing, what are other towns doing, how can we adopt the best practices to make our children as safe as possible. And they review these things with Superintendent Granatino on a regular basis. They do active shooter training and training within the schools quarterly. We don't know what the protocols are. We shouldn't know what the protocols are because that's a safety issue. But I know they're working on it, and they continue to work on it, and they're doing a great job.
So you feel pretty good about the safety of the schools here in Marshfield?
I feel that they're as safe as they can be, and there is always room for improvement. And I know the Chief DeVars, Superintendent Granatino, the Board of Selectmen, and the Board of the School Committee are always working to keep our children safe and enhance those safety protocols.
Okay. Tom Vasirka, what do you think? Do you know about the safety in the schools? Do you feel good about it?
I feel confident about it, but as Mike said, there is definitely room for improvement. Marshall has been safe. I could attribute that to obviously Phil Tavares and his crew. For being out there, being diligent out there, and there is obviously room for improvement, but I believe there's definitely room.
Okay. Mike, you had another comment?
I just want to ask the questions, Mr. Vasirka. Did you ever reach out to Chief DeVars and actually go over the shooting protocols? Did you go to the active shooter training? Because I was there and I didn't see
you. You know what? You'll have a chance to ask each other questions.
I just thought it was a fair question now, for the topic.
I know,
Christine,
but
I'll wait.
I know, but right now we're asking the questions.
All right.
Okay. Any follow-up to this topic? Kevin Tachi?
I wanted to follow up on the marijuana one, and that is...
Okay.
Recreational marijuana, it's here in the community. Mm-hmm. The community it voted last year, and it's here. Now you're looking to monetize it, and you're going to become a destination, seeing that there are other communities, in neighboring communities, that have banned it and are prohibiting it. Is there a way to embrace this, to be able to maximize the monies that you can get in, with these facilities that are going to be properly zoned?
Who do you want to ask?
We'll ask Mike first.
So first and foremost, because they were voted in by the state and then subsequently by the town, we have to designate an area and come up with protocols. We plan to adopt the protocols from the Cannabis Control Committee and adopt them here locally.
Right.
In addition to that, if you're asking about the max value, we get a town chair from each facility, which we certainly would want. And again, we want the max tax value. And again, some of those dedicated revenue streams should go to police and fire.
But what will be done to, again, embrace, is there an other, I'm not talking about whatever the facility is, put a 420 or a pot leaf or something on the side of it, but what will Marshfield do? What can you guys do as officials to get the word out that you are offering recreational marijuana, at least be able to maximize the revenue?
So, I'm not sure if you're asking, are we going to promote it?
I'm just asking, is this something that you'll it's here to promote, or is it a matter of it's there and let people come to and see what happens? What's your opinion?
I personally am not going to promote the fact that we have recreational marijuana in the town. However, it's here. And I think because it's here and we have to deal with it, it's imperative for us to take the max tax value out of it and reapply it to the citizens of the community.
Okay. Same for Thomas.
Yeah, I believe it's been going on. It's been here. We should get the maximum value that we can from it. As far as advertising for it, absolutely not. They're going to get enough as it is from the people that are using it and going to it. So I don't think putting a sign or anything else or advocating for it is the way to go, because once again, I did not vote for it, and I've never used it, and I don't agree with it. But that's a choice that people make, and if that's going to be the case, then we should just get the maximum value we can for the town.
Okay.
Fine.
Follow up, Charles Mathewson, question.
I've heard from a couple of business owners in town having difficulty finding hires, qualified people to work in entry-level jobs because they're addicted. There was just a big fentanyl bust in Marshfield. Are we spinning our wheels here, or is there something new to try? Marshfield seems to be on the downward trend with opioids compared to other towns. And this is nothing against Phil Tavares, who we all appreciate very much. But the towns come and go with the opioid crisis, and right now Marshfield seems to be hit
particularly hard.
Question for me. So I'd agree with some of that. One, that this town has hit particularly hard, like many Seltzer communities. The reality is that the opioid epidemic isn't going away. And Phil Tavares, the Board of Selectmen, school committee, superintendent of schools have all actively engaged in trying to combat this, specifically in coordination with the drug task force here in town, the Marshfield Facts Group. So we are doing something about it. We've constantly done something about it. One of the things that we initially did is create the prescription drug drop-off. That was one of its first in its creation. It's at the police station. You can drop off your medication there so that it's not sitting around the house. That's been so successful that Chief Tavares has to weigh the amount of drugs that are dropped off instead of counting it. He simply takes too much time. So one, we consistently do something there. Secondly, the Old Colony Crime Task Force, something that was created in collaboration with other towns by Chief Tavares. That task force consists of 18 communities that work together to combat all forms of crime. And the reality is that the reference to recent fentanyl bust in Marshfield is that the police made that arrest in conjunction with information that they always get from the street and in partnership with the Old Colony Crime Task Force and other communities. So they are doing a good job on it, and they'll continue to do a good job on it.
Okay, same question.
I don't think we should ever give up on it as far as teaching and so forth. I believe it starts at home at a young age, teaching children about it, the effects of it. So as far as giving up because of that, I don't think that is an option at all, because that's giving up on children and the people. It's an addiction. It happens. People need help, and I just think we should be able to try to offer them more help or more avenues to get treated. It's affected my family tremendously. I've lost a cousin from it, and I had another cousin that was able to seek help, being in the right place and going the right place. So never give up on it. As far as the question as it was asked about finding people to work, yeah, it is definitely hurting some of these businesses because they can't find qualified people because, you know, for those reasons. And I just think with better education, starting earlier at home with the parents is where it starts.
Mike Bradley, you wanted to make another comment?
Yep, just to touch on the education aspect is that we as a community, specifically the police department, again, in conjunction with the superintendent of the schools, take education very seriously. So they educate children at the fifth grade level and eighth grade level at all ages, but specifically at those grades because they're moving into new schools, and they teach them the dangers of drug use and the effects of drug use. In addition to that, Marshfield was partnered or created a program where the police actively go to your home. If you had an overdose, they come with a healthcare worker in an unmarked cruiser with a detective in plain clothes to offer you a bed. That happens within 24 hours. Moreover, in conjunction with what's called Project Outreach, which is created by the DA and I believe the Sheriff of Plymouth County, if one of our citizens in Marshfield has an overdose in another community, we are notified about it and we still go out and offer them resources. We offer them a bed. We offer them rehabilitation. We're not just leaving people and hitting them with Narcan. They're doing all the follow-up work and they should continue to do so.
Kevin Tachi.
Yeah, so I'm going to go back to, I think earlier talked a little bit about seawalls. They're a constant concern and source of maintenance and repair. I want to ask you this, and that is where does the town stand in regards to its coastal infrastructure plan that is in place in regards to long-term seawall solutions and to deal with climate change? Are you satisfied with that particular plan? If no, what needs to be done? We'll start with Thomas.
I believe with the tides and everything changing, more has to be done. I know raising the seawall height has definitely helped in certain parts of that area down there. I know Brent Rock takes a terrible hit and took a terrible hit this year again, losing three houses and businesses being affected, being closed because of flooding. Something has to be done. I'm not sure you can go much higher with the wall, but either some type of system or more pumps that can move the water out and keep it and raise the height somehow, getting the state involved. But something has to be done to help those people down there because it's a tragedy what's happened this year and those people that have lost basically their whole lives there.
Mr. Bradley, same question.
We live in the south coast of Massachusetts. We've constantly had a problem with seawalls, and we will forever have a problem with seawalls. Currently, there are five seawall breaches in the Brant Rock area as a result of the four nor'easter storms that we all were here for. So during those storms, I participated with the Emergency Operations Center, as I always do, in conjunction with Representative Cantwell and Senator O'Connor, Congressman Keating, and actually we had Lieutenant Governor Polito down here. So the objective is to find the areas where we can fix. There's $1.5 million right now that we just got allocated in emergency funding to maintain and to fix those five breached areas. And in the future, just to give you an example, $3,500 per linear foot to replace, $1,500 per linear foot to repair. Very expensive, so we have short-term funding options and long-term funding options that are always going to be part of our budget and always going to be part of this community. Just to, again, this 30% of the tax base that we receive as a town comes from communities that are threatened by the sea. We need to protect the people because they need protection from the coast. We need to do it because it affects our tax base, and moreover, it's just the right thing to do. In regards to new seawall, the new seawall on Foster Ave is higher and is thicker. That seawall did much better in the storms than the seawalls that failed. So when we look for replacing, we need to go bigger and higher when we can.
Is it a matter of maybe new technology? Is the town currently exploring? You mentioned about, you know, a thicker and taller seawall. Is there, again, you also mentioned, Mr. Bradley, about forever going to have to worry about these seawalls and repairing them. But are you hoping that there's going to be a day that you don't have to worry about that if you keep if the town keeps experimenting and looking at new technology to be able to offset this?
One can hope. One can hope, Kevin. But the reality is every year, every day of every year, we worry about the seawalls and we end up fixing them. We have to fix them. We have to protect the people that are on them and our community. The Brent Rock area is devastated. And we're not only talking about the homes that are directly on the seawall. We're talking about the entire area that gets flooded with water and debris. So part of that $1.5 million that I mentioned, I think $200,000 just goes for cleanup and debris that was in the Brent Rock area. So we're never going to get rid of this problem. We're always going to, the only way to face it is head on, and we have short-term solutions to fix and long-term replace and repair.
Mr. Vasirka, do you want to follow up on that? And when I asked Mr. Bradley?
Yeah, Brent Rock has been devastated, and as I said, the wall definitely, with the breaches, definitely did not help. I know they tried to obviously stop some of it from happening, but I think more definitely needs to be done. Funding is definitely an issue.
How about technology? Do you think the town should be looking at different technologies, different ways, whether it's land taking, whether it's a thicker and taller wall, whether it's materials?
Well, I'm not for taking anything from anybody, but definitely bigger and taller walls, maybe some type of a breaker system that would kind of break the waves further out so that, you know, that would limit how high they get. I mean, coming over a house, over the roof of a house that, you know, was probably about 30 feet was pretty high for the waves to come over. As Mike said, the problem is probably never going to go away, but we need to address it and do the best we can to try to help those people down there and the businesses down there, because everybody suffers. Marshfield suffers. The people suffer.
Okay. Charlie, another question, then we're going to go to lightning round.
At what point, let's face it, the name of the town is Marshfield, and there's a lot of marshland in Marshfield. What for you is the line where you start to say, we have to talk about people moving out of these areas and giving up their houses? Because if you replace a house 2-3 times with the flood insurance, maybe it's time to give it up. Mike, where would that line be drawn for you?
First of all, there is no retreat, Charlie. We will never give up on the people that own those homes, on the community. So giving up is simply not an option. The only option is to, one, look into technology, which we do. I haven't seen anything great coming on the horizon that may prevent this, but the only thing that we know works right now is to replace the existing seawalls where appropriate and to repair where necessary. We cannot ever ask these people to move out of their homes. It would be patently unfair. I would never do it.
Do you agree with that, Thomas Vasirka?
I definitely agree with that, and I believe obviously putting these houses on stilts now when they have to be rebuilt will definitely help. I know that new six-unit condo that went in down there did not suffer any damage. If it did, it was very minor compared to the other damage that was around. So I believe, obviously, putting the houses up higher, not that you want to see them go too high, but I believe that's an option, and that helps. Okay. Anything we can do to alleviate and help is the way to go, but not taking stuff from people, no.
I want to move very quickly to the lightning round, and these are the questions where we'll either ask for a one- or two-word answer, a yes or no, or one or two sentences. I'm going to start here because it's my turn. And I always ask this question, county government
Are we getting anything out of it? Should we stay or should we go? Two sentences, Thomas Vasirko.
I believe we should stay. We need the right people in there.
Okay. What do you think? You agree with that, Mike Bradley?
I'm the vice chair of the county advisory board, so I am a big fan of county government. They do a lot for us. Unfortunately, people don't know what most of that is, but they do. They are there.
Can I get two sentences?
Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm a lawyer. Sometimes I just can't help myself.
I think we need an Aw Christine. We need a Pallotta-esque Aw Christine.
I know I get an angry text from him. Why did you ask that question? That's okay. Charlie, do you have a lightning round question for our candidates here?
Always. And Mike, you're the vice chairman, soon to be chairman of the County Advisory Committee, let's add. Guys, what intersection or road in Marshfield do you avoid, Mike?
What intersection or road do I avoid? 139.
Dom?
139 and 3A I try to avoid, but there's unfortunately not too many ways of going around it.
Okay. Kevin?
Gentlemen, are you for or against the town having a ban on plastic bags? Thomas?
I am for having a ban on it. I believe protecting the environment is definitely important, so I am for it.
Okay. Mike Bradley?
As it's written, I'm not for it. However, if they exempted small businesses from the ban, I would be for it.
Okay. Any other lightning round questions? I want to give these. Okay, Charlie, one. I want to give these guys a chance to ask each other a question.
Okay.
What's your favorite view in town?
Is this for me?
Yes.
That's the view from Humrock Beach.
Okay.
The view from the beach, right where I am, mm-hmm. in Sunrise Beach.
Okay. Kevin?
I just want to throw one more in, and that is, which of the following does Marshfield need more of? Affordable housing, rental units, or commercial developments? Pick one.
Is this for me?
For you, Mike, yeah.
Commercial development, 100%.
Thomas?
Commercial development, stuff for the children.
Okay.
What needs to change in Marshfield? Two sentences.
Attitude, outlook, innovation, being a voice for the people, what the people want.
Okay. Mike Bradley, what needs to change in Marshfield?
The constant friction between separately elected boards and departments needs to change. We need to work together in a collaborative effort.
Okay. Kevin Tachi, another lightning round question?
Yeah, I have one more question.
Okay.
What would best describe you when handling a situation or problem, reactive or proactive?
Let's start with Thomas Vasirko.
Proactive. I try to look at both sides to see what kind of, if we can come to the middle and try to make an agreement.
Proactive or reactive, Mike?
Both.
And at the same time?
Both. You can always be proactive in trying to avoid problems, and we're always reactive, so I think we're both.
Okay. Charlie, lightning round question.
Where in Marshfield do you most often go out to eat, Tom?
Wow.
What are you writing, like a travel guide here?
It would be probably Brant Rock.
Take 139 down to Brant Rock.
I would say Brant Rock is the most.
Okay.
To try to be fair, I'm going to list the four favorite restaurants.
Okay, let's start.
Starting with the Bridgeway, Cask and Flag at Station 8, and then, there's so many great restaurants in town. So
tried the sauteed
Had
scallops.
There you go. Don't forget Had Ads.
There you go. Terrific view. All right. I want to give you gentlemen a question, a chance to ask each other a question. Mike, do you have a question for Thomas Vasirko?
Sure, Tom. How do you think, or what have you done? I mean, let me rephrase this. Earlier you said that you want to stop complaining and put your money where your mouth is and do something. Tell me what you've done in the last year since the last election, and tell me how that's going to be helpful to the town.
Well, I've been watching the meetings online, seeing what goes on, and I haven't seen very much of a change in what's gone on at the selectmen's meetings. It's the good old boy network up there. People want change, and talking to people, they want to change. And I believe I could offer that change. I'm not a politician. I'm not in this for any other reason. I'm in this to help the town grow and be better. And I believe we need some more growth down here. 96% of the revenue the town gets is from the residents. Only 4% from the businesses. We need more down here. We need more stuff for the children. I would be an advocate trying to get stuff down here for the kids. When I was a kid down here, there was a lot of stuff. Now there's nothing.
Okay.
Other than the Boys and Girls Club.
What about a question? Question for Mike now.
Can I give a follow up? Talking about it is easy. Tell me how you do it.
Working with people.
Has to be
working with people. Going out, trying to find people to invest in the town. Come into the town. That's all we do. Go out, knock on doors. You got to go out and meet people.
Okay. Now, your question, Thomas Vasirko, your question for Mike Bradley.
I would like to know what Mike's going to do different than he hasn't done in the last 6 years. What's he going to do different?
The last 6 years, well, been here for 3 years, so we're going to continue to do What I've done in the last 3 years is to work with the community, to work with our neighbors, to continue to promote responsible spending for responsible projects, and to keep the budget within the realm of reason. Specifically, do you want more on that? I'm happy to go.
I can tell you
exactly what I want to do. I asked you for specific examples,
and you give me lofty goals, which is fine.
Lofty goals are easy, Christine.
Okay, so give us specific examples.
Sure. So specific examples are some things that I already referenced, is that we made the FEMA maps specifically for our residents more reasonable. We create a maritime center, which is a joint use facility in one of the busiest harbors in the Commonwealth. We're improving efficiency morale. And we're creating projects that make sense. Specifically, the Veterans Housing Project, come out to town meeting on 423.
It
needs your support.
Okay. Dude, I want you to ask each other a lightning round question where you can ask the other person a question that is either yes or no or one or two sentences. Mike, your question for Tom.
Tom, do you feel you volunteer for anything in town?
I haven't recently, no, because I had plans on running for Board of Selectmen, and I felt as though I didn't want to take a position that I wouldn't be able to fulfill.
Okay, your question, a lightning round question for Mike.
Mike, you said that we need, that Phil needs more police. What has been done? I believe last year, if I'm not mistaken, it was on the town warrant from police officers, and I don't know if it was pulled or it was turned down. I didn't hear anybody speak about that then.
Well, thank you for the question.
Two sentences.
Every year I've advocated for more police officers, and every year I've tried to put them on. Unfortunately, I don't get agreement on that every year, but every year I will continue to put more police officers on within the confines of the budget.
Okay, and we got time for each one of you to ask each other another question. Mike, question for Tom.
Tom, what's the number one change you make at Town Hall based on what you said today?
I would go to each and every department, and I would introduce myself and try to have, have more communication, open the lines of communication, talk. Boards definitely need to talk to each other, and it hasn't been happening.
Okay, and your question for Mike?
Would be probably on the similar lines. I mean, in Town Hall, what else do you plan on changing in Town Hall to make it better?
We plan to hopefully, with the adoption of charter change, make the town community, the communities work with one another to get that efficiency and communication that everybody wants. It's been getting better, and it's going to continue to get better.
Okay. What I want to do now is go to final statements, and you've got 2 minutes. You can say whatever you want, whatever you want to wrap up and talk about, what you hope to bring to this position of Marshfield Selectman. We're going to reverse the order now. We started with Mike Bradley, and then we went to Thomas Vasirka when we started. So now we're going to start with Thomas Vasirka and then go to Mike Bradley. Thomas, your final statement for your listeners and viewers here for the post for Marshfield Selectman.
I want to thank the listeners. I want to thank WATD for hosting this forum. What I plan to do is continue to be a voice for the people. I've been walking around talking to people, talking to businesses. I like to hear the feedback, the ideas, and I would believe that, not being from political office, not being, owned by anybody, so to speak, I want to be that voice. I want to be that independent voice to fight for them. I would like to see more, like I said, more stuff down here for the kids to do. I'd love to see an ice skating rink down here. I know that was proposed in the past and was turned down, but things definitely need some more change. Definitely need change. Change is good.
Okay, and that's a final statement from Thomas Vasirka, candidate for Marshfield Selectman. Mike Bradley, your final statement here.
Well, first and foremost, I want to thank my wife and my children for letting me do this. Without them, I couldn't do it. I want to thank Christine James and the forum here today, Kevin, Charles, I appreciate it, and WATD. It's important that we have some continuity of government. The reason I'm running for re-election is I'm simply not finished yet. We've got a lot accomplished in 3 years, and I'm not done. There's a lot of projects on the horizon that make sense, the Veterans Housing Project being one of them. There are additional changes in the budget that can make the budget more efficient. Thankfully, we have not had to lay an employee off since I've been here, and I never want to lay an employee off. So going forward, I think that we can continue the pattern of conservative spending, but as the Board of Selectmen, we also want to bring ideas and initiatives to the town, because it's not us that make the final decisions, it's the town. So what we want to do is bring good spending options and good projects to the town that they can support, and they can make these decisions in town meeting.
Thank you. That was Mike Bradley, his final statement. Gentlemen, do you folks have ways that people can get information about both of your candidacies, phone numbers, websites? Tom?
I'm on Facebook. You can reach out to me on Facebook, and my telephone number, I'm glad to give it out. It's 617 792-6633. I'd like to hear some feedback.
Okay, Mike Bradley, how can people find out more about you?
Similarly, you can call me, 781-837-0076. You can find me on Facebook, or you can go to mgbradley.org, or you can simply call me through the Selectman's Office of the Town. And one last thing I want everybody to do is to come out and vote on April 28th. Not only go to the town meeting on the 23rd, but come out to vote on April 28th, and I hope I get your vote.
Thank you very much. You've been listening to the candidates here from Marshfield Selectmen. You've got Mike Bradley, and you've got Thomas Vasurka asking questions with me today. We've got Kevin Tachi. He's the host of Monday Night Talk. Charles Mathewson, WATD reporter. We've got Marshfield Community Television here as well. That handsome young man behind me. Hello there. Could see the back of my head, so I'm glad people know that I finally exist here.
That's whose head that is.
Yes, thank you very much. And again, the election is, I believe, April 28th. Remember, you'll hear the results here first on WATD, live on air, online, as soon as they are in. And as we'd like to tell everybody, remember, if you don't vote, you don't have a voice. Get out there and do it. Check our WATD website, too, 959WATD.com. I'm Christine James. Thank you for listening.
South Shore's first choice for live team coverage of breaking news, emergency traffic, and severe weather. 95.9 WATD FM Marshfield and 95.9 WATD.com.